Rain is here, and it's election day. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday. Like I said, election day. I looked down. November 8th, 2022. It's Mariah Carey season again.
It's always Mariah Carey
season. That's Ian Ferguson in this great True Classic t-shirt. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we're talking about, we got stuff going on.
We got stuff to talk about.
We got more Heritage Auction results. We have
Billy Mitchell back in the news.
Standard Time sucks, which we'll get into, and more. I love Columbo. We talked about Columbo a bit.
Yep.
I've started watching it on Freevee, whatever that is. Listen to that if you want on the exclusive podcast, patreon.com/CU podcast.
You know,
nothing matters with Pat and Ian. What do you love, Ian?
I love the NBA app.
Yeah, it's solid. Like I said, they upgraded. If you had it last year, Ian.
I did not.
It was very different on the TV. It was bad.
I've never used apps for sports, for anything. But I downloaded it yesterday because I was going to go play pinball. There's a tournament tonight, so I wanted to go practice a little bit. But I wanted to watch the Pistons game. So I downloaded the app, signed into League Pass. And, you know, watching it on the phone is watching it on the phone, but it was, honestly, I think there were less hiccups on the phone than there were on the PC.
Wow.
In terms of streaming. And I wasn't streaming it from a network either. I was, like, streaming it at the bar, and it was coming through smooth.
Do you have the live stats option like you do on the TV? On TV, you click a button, you get the stats updated for every player.
Oh, really?
As it goes, yeah.
I don't know.
Very interesting.
But the one thing I did do that I know people have been doing forever, so welcome me into modern times. I set up the app to send me notifications on how teams are doing. So I don't have to, like, if I'm out, I get tip off, first quarter update, halftime update, third quarter, game end, and then highlights.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You got to see Detroit take on the defending champions.
And
Curry strapped the team on his back.
No, Detroit didn't take him off. Last night was Kings.
Oh, that's right, it was Kings. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was rooting for the Kings.
Detroit, they played them last week?
Yeah, and they did win against Golden
that's
State.
Right. It was the end of the back-to-back.
And then they won against OKC last night. It's, I mean, they only have three wins.
But if you follow the Kings because you're a weirdo, that's right. You like the Kings.
I don't like follow them, but they're my California exception, and I will root for them as long as they are not playing against a team that I am more dedicated to.
Like the Pistons.
The hierarchy goes like Pistons, Blazers, and then I just like a lot of teams, but the Kings.
Blazers are doing well this year so
far.
People weren't expecting that. Dame is back, and he's healthy.
I think they're 7-3 right now. Pistons are 3-7. You advanced to 4-7 last night.
Well, not me personally, but yes.
Yeah, and Lakers. 4-7. Oh, did the Lakers lose last night?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they lost.
Fuck yeah. So they are worse than the Pistons.
Oh, no, Lakers aren't going anywhere.
I know, but I'm just like, Pistons are better than the Lakers, and that makes me happy. I'm rooting for, like, the lower parts of the bracket here.
I think LeBron might be hurt. He's not himself. Either that or Father Time finally caught up to him. It happens. It's happened with Brady right now where he can't play forever. Kareem played till he was like 40, 41. You know, and you know, you can't do it forever. LeBron's going to turn 38. And he's been playing in the league like 20 years almost. This is 20 seasons. That's a lot of wear and tear.
Are the Lakers the worst team in the NBA right now?
I don't know. You can look
it up. They're 2-8.
I was going to say. We're back on standard time here in the U.S. And I'm a proponent for getting rid of standard time and going to daylight savings, which means that it's darker in the morning and it's lighter at night. That's why it's called daylight savings, I think. I don't know why they chose it. So earlier in March this year, we were happy that the Senate unanimously passed the law saying that we were going to get done with going back and forth. That this would be technically the last time we'd go through this cycle, that once we sprung forward, spring 2023, that'd be it. We'd be done with this charade. I didn't realize it never went to the House for a vote. So now it's in jeopardy of not happening at all because the House wouldn't even bring it to a vote on the floor because it seems like Congress people don't know what their constituents want. And it's like, why don't you fucking find out? You've had several months. The Senate knows. The Senate, unanimous. It was 98-0. I don't know the two people that didn't vote on it or whatever it was. Can we get done with this? It sucks. Your sleep gets fucked with. I was more tired in the first day and a half of this. Our circadian rhythms are all screwy because of this. And the only argument I hear for keeping this around is because of school children in the morning being too dark. That's the only argument I have ever heard for still going through this bullshit every year. That's
well,
it.
Yes, which I think they'll be fine. They're going to be fine. They'll live. They're going to be fine.
Most will live. Here's the point. If you're that concerned, start classes later. Do that. Start your work later if you're concerned about being dark in the morning. Because it screws with everyone else's lives on the planet.
I think the bigger problem is that the one that I hear about is that people in the middle states, mm-hmm. like the flyover states, they're going to get hit the most. Like, I think that they won't see sunlight until something like 9 or 9:30 or something ridiculous like that. There's a few spots in the U.S. where,
In the morning.
Yeah. Where it will be dark for a very, very long time in the morning.
Yeah,
and
then
I think
it's lighter
that's,
at night.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It evens out. It's the same amount. Mexico got rid of it. They got rid of it. They're done with this going back and forth stuff. They're done. And there's many states have already voted to get rid of it. Arizona doesn't do it. Arizona, part of the year, it's exactly on San Diego time, and then they're an hour ahead other parts of the year. So they don't do it anymore. I hope more and more states do it to force the states have voted on it to get rid of it if it federally goes through. But Arizona somehow does it on their own. I don't know why.
Right.
But I wish states would just say, screw it. We're going to just start doing it. We're going to just do it on our own, and the states all unionize and do it. That's what I hope. Because if you look up the sleep patterns and the psychology, it's bad for people. It's bad.
Sure.
It's bad.
Lots of people are like, oh, gaining an hour of sleep is better, but it still screws you up.
No, it gets lighter earlier, so then you're going to get up earlier. And then at night, you get depressed more because of the darkness. And then someone brought an argument be about it leads to more accidents at night. Because you're driving in more darkness, especially coming home from work. You're more likely, especially it happened to my father. He hit a deer with his car once, totaled his car. That happens in some of the states.
Oh, Buffalo, New York.
Yeah.
All the time.
So you're risking that end of it.
That's super common.
Because instead of it getting dark at at 7 or 7:30 or 6, now it's getting dark at 4:30 or 5, and people are driving home at 6, and it's a lot harder, and it sucks. I'm sorry. There's going to be a few people in the comments say we're crazy and this is why, but I think 90% of people want to get rid of this.
I think a lot of people do want to get rid of it. It's old fashioned and pointless.
Spring forward and we're done. And if we're worried about little school children, well, adjust the school schedule. Have them start school at like 8:30 instead of 7:30 or whatever. I think I used to start school at what time I used to start school? Like 7:50 grammar school.
I think that's the time I started high school. It was like 7:55, yeah. I think, was home.
Because I used to get picked up on the bus like 7:25.
Because I'd get there at like 7:30.
I used to get picked up like 7:20, 7:25, get to school like 7:40, something like that. God, I used to start school so early, thinking back. I used to get up for high school at 6 a.m. or before. I think it was like 6. Yeah.
I'd get up at 6:30, shower. It took me 7 minutes to walk to school.
Oh, you walked to school. Yeah. Back in my day.
Oh, it was like I said, 7 minutes. It's like 3-4 blocks away. It took no time.
Well, public schools always started later than private schools. Because
this is public. I started at 7:55.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that was early. Then I think I started early. I think I started 7:30 high school. It was early.
Okay, yeah, I mean that.
But we got out at like 2. We got out like about
1:50. Yeah, I didn't get out until like 2:55. I think.
I think we got out 1:50 or 1:55 was ever for 2. So whatever. What else is going on? Let's get through this podcast. Twitter's a mess.
Twitter's an absolute mess.
We'll see where it goes.
I'm just having fun watching Elon Musk tweet through it because he's
destroying it every day. Supposedly there was a really bad call with advertisers because all the advertisers
and some of the advertisers when he was talking about like that meeting he was misrepresenting it, and some of the advertisers came at him and was like, no, this is what happened in the meeting, Elon.
Oh really?
Yeah. And then he blocked the one advertiser.
So Elon overpaid. He bought Twitter for $44 billion. Estimates he overpaid by $20-25 billion because he's a dummy. I mean, he's a dummy. It's never been a profitable business.
Nope.
He'll never break even on it. It's just how much money is he going to lose? So they're going to do this $8 verification thing. Before now, like, I'm verified my main account. Ian was before.
I was never verified. I never went after it.
So you're verified, meaning that no one can impersonate you. And that was for journalists, for public figures, for politicians, for governments.
Right.
So that no one can fuck around. That's what it was for. Now it's going to be for anyone who pays $8 a month.
Yep.
Which could lead to haywire, because now people could register and then do something and try to impersonate, it'll be a lot harder to know what's going on there, and it's just a bad idea. And
I think the bigger problem is, you know, he says, oh, long gone is the lords and serfs method for, you know,
lords and serfs. You guys, people pay money for something that was a free.
Right. Exactly. So now it really it's hilarious. Now you're asking people to pay money for something. And he said algorithm adds priority of replies and whatnot is all going to be based on whether or not you have the check mark or not. So
you're monetizing.
He's an incredibly huge idiot. You're literally separating it into two classes, the haves and the have nots on Twitter.
You're monetizing. You're basically dividing free speech by if you're paying or not. And then people say, well, Pat, if you have money, you shouldn't worry about it. It's not just rich people that are verified. It's people that are journalists in like smaller countries, third world nations. It's very important for these people to stay verified for lots of different reasons. So there's not a lot of misinformation out there. People don't misrepresent them or impersonate them. So it's bad. It's bad. And now the advertising is going to be gone, supposedly, going forward.
Apparently the advertisers have been leaving in droves.
Oh, yeah. And they had, like I said, they had a meeting. And then supposedly on the spot during the call, advertisers pulled their ads out.
Oh, yeah. They were like adjusting budgets during the meeting. And pulling stuff.
Advertiser, Twitter, people overemphasize, I think, underemphasized at some points. But Twitter, not everyone's on Twitter still. Yes, a lot of people use it, but not everyone's on it so much so that the advertisers need it.
No, they don't.
Advertise. That's the key. This is pocket change to Coca-Cola to advertise on Twitter. Pocket change. They don't need Twitter to sell Coca-Cola or to sell Audis or to sell, you know, luxury
cars. From what I'm reading, a lot of it is holdovers from, you know, just individual people developing good business relationships with these companies at Twitter, and they constantly kept up on them. They'd be like, hey, advertise with us. And they're like, yeah, sure, here's some money. But now those people are gone.
So I don't
know. All of your contacts are gone.
And then a lot of people are going to refuse to do the $8. I don't think I will. I think it's not that it's insulting, but Stephen King had a great tweet. It's like, you should be paying me to write content because like the people are the content on Twitter.
Yeah.
We are the content. We produce the content that people want to read or interact with. That's the difference. Now you're making us customers when we are the reason the platform exists in the first place. The same thing with YouTube. It's if you charge people to upload on YouTube, it would be weird. To do that.
From what I have heard, if you previously had a check mark, they will not take it away if you do not pay.
Oh.
He was originally saying that you would have to pay for it, but now it seems like they are doubling back on that.
Because they realize, like, if people like Taylor Swift leave the platform and big famous people, like, they're the reason people interact with it. Like, it'd be insulting to say, hey, Taylor Swift, pay $8. Hey, LeBron James, pay $8 a month. You'd be like, what are you kidding me? Like, why would I do that? Like, why would I do that?
Absolutely not.
I'm the reason the platform is popular. Like, that's what these people would say. So we'll see. Is Twitter too big to fail? I don't know. We've seen other social media platforms come and go.
I do not think it's too big to fail. I don't think any social media platform is too big to fail.
It's been ingrained now for like 13 years, though, about. So like 14 years, almost 15 years. So I don't know.
It's useful. And I think people are not going to vacate it as quickly as people think. Because whatever, it's been run like shit before. I think it's comforting for a lot of people.
Sure.
Mastodon's overly confusing. Not a lot of people like Discord. No one wants to go back to Facebook.
Tribal is another one that starts to come up. One, I don't know.
So, I guess we'll see on that.
But nothing's too big to fail. Everyone was on MySpace at one point. Every single person was on MySpace. And like you said, Facebook has fallen out of favor. Young people are not on Facebook. That's like watching cable news. You know, Facebook. So we'll see. You talking about your Marvel Snap experiences? Ian?
Yeah, I'll kind of rush through it, but I've been playing a lot of Marvel Snap. Marvel Snap, if you've been online anywhere, you probably have not been able to avoid people talking about it or ads for it. It's a card battler that goes extremely quickly. It's 6 turns. That's it. And everything is played at the same time. So cards are flipped at the same time. It's not turns. It's not like I take a turn and you take a turn and I take a turn and you take a turn. It's play your cards face down, reveal them at the same time. I really enjoyed it. Basically, there's 3 bases. The goal is to control 2 or 3 of the bases at the, best out of 3 at the end of the 6 rounds.
Okay.
your first turn, you start with 1 point of power, and each turn after it adds another point of power. So your first turn, you can play 1 point of power cards. Your second turn, you have 2 points of power. So you can play 2 1 power cards or 1 2 power card. And then, 3, 4, 5, 6. And obviously, as it goes higher, those cards get more popular. A really fun game. I think it's fantastically crafted. The rules are great. It's fun. But problematically, I bought in for one season pass, $9.99, because I wanted to just kind of see how it would play, when you pay a little bit of money. And season passes are how so many of these free-to-play games work. Battle passes, basically, where as you go up in rank, it's a set ladder. So every time you achieve something, you get free stuff. You get gold, you get credits, or you get a card or something. Right. It's to incentivize the grind. Like I said, the game is fun, but obviously I can see power creep happening. There is a small pool of cards since your deck is only made out of 12 cards. Things are starting to feel samey.
Only 12?
Yeah, you get six turns.
That's it. Okay.
You start with three cards drawn, and then at the start of the first turn, you draw one more. So you start with four cards in your hand.
Okay.
So there's three cards each game that won't be drawn for you. I think power creep is going to set in. Things are getting a little samey because of the small pool of cards. It's a great idea, but I still think that going free to play on just about anything, it's not something I can buy into, especially when it's not exactly pay to win. But if you don't pay, you're not really, you're going to stay in silver rank and, use the same cards over and over again, and you're going to lose interest. So
gotcha.
I'd love to see what the updates bring. I'd love to check the game out in 6 months and see where it is on Steam. They are calling it in early access. So, this is, I guess they're still kind of considering this a tryout period. Hopefully they'll fix some of the issues.
Hopefully. Sega Genesis 2 Mini is out. First impressions are out. I think people like it.
Yep.
I guess
it's been getting good impressions. People seem to enjoy it. It's an interesting selection of games. I have not got one. You haven't got one.
I forgot about it was coming out. I don't have the first one, do I? No. Why did I get the first one? I forget. But they're available. They're not.
You gave me the first one and then weirdly kept the accessories.
Oh, that's right. So I was nice to Ian, but I kept the accessories. I kept the Sega CD tower thing. Okay. Netflix is announcing a Gears of War movie and cartoon.
This just seems like past the point in time where Gears of War was popular. I feel like it seems like too late to do this. I mean, I know there was comics that were very popular, and I know they just released games. They released Tactics in 2020. And then part five was, 2018? But I feel like the heyday of its popularity was clearly during the Xbox 360 era.
Or like it peaked like maybe 10 years ago, something
like
that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not that it's a series that no one likes, but I just don't see it having that red-hot popularity to push, a movie and support a cartoon, especially when like something even bigger like Halo, was met with pretty, when they did the TV show, it was largely met with derision.
Oh, well, I don't know how many people saw it, though. Obviously, there's people that had problems with the main character and then I guess the pacing and the effects on. It's tough to do that sort of stuff. But I don't know. I'm just thinking about must have been. I don't know if it was cheap. What happened? We don't have a Fortnite animated series, do we? Everyone would watch that.
I feel like that would make more sense, especially if you could work the licensing in like they do in the game to have like guest characters, Street Fighter characters or Marvel characters or Dragon Ball characters.
I can't picture a hardcore Gears of War fan saying, I'm going to watch the animated Gears of War.
I'm sure there are. And like I said, no offense if you love that series. It seems like way too late for this.
Just another slap in my Unreal face. That's all. That's all. Would it be Gears of War if it wasn't for Unreal? Ridiculous. I mean, look at the character designs of Gears of War and the characters in Unreal Tournament. You go back and you look at those character designs.
By the time you get to Unreal Tournament 3, they're basically Gears of War.
Yeah, they're the
Gears
same
of War characters
at that point. and those games come out, you know, between a year apart. But yeah, you can always play Unreal in third person. No one did it, but you could if you wanted to. On the replays, it was always in third person. But anyway, I'll get that game eventually. I'll get it. I'll get the funding. I'll buy the rights. I'll finish the fucking alpha that's been existed for 5 years at this point. I forgot to mention that on the Sega Genesis Mini 2 stuff.
Oh,
that Sega or someone from Sega, someone sent it. I forget who sent it. I'm sorry. They sent did a Peter Falk or something. That's confusing me. They sent out a tweet asking what the next mini should be. It's like, should we do the
Dreamcast
SG-1000 or the Mark II or the SG? And then a couple of things I never heard of. And then obviously Dreamcast was on the list along with Sega Saturn. And it's like, if they're going to do another one, it'll probably be Dreamcast. I don't know if they will. I think we're getting to the point where people are caring less and less about these. We've had all the big 8 and 16-bit ones come out. We've had, several of these? We have 7 or 8 mainstream ones. I'm not even counting the Neo Geo arcade stick ones. I don't know. But there's been a lot of these, and I think we're running out. I think it's almost like the standalone Pong crash that kind of happened in the late 70s.
Sure.
It's like, how many of those do you want laying around?
I do think a Dreamcast one would do well. I think a Saturn one would be too niche.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Maybe you can combine them, but no, the emulation's different. That's right. The emulation sucks on Saturn compared to everything.
They're two very different.
Get that Jaguar Mini out. That would be interesting. We talked about that before. I think we talked about that.
We don't need one. I mean, the interesting thing is, I mean, and we can promote this. That Atari 50th collection comes out on Friday.
I got to order that. I'm going to order that.
Yeah. I'm definitely buying that. Digital Eclipse is putting out, and there's a bunch of Jaguar games on there.
That's right.
And I think that's going to be your happy medium on that.
It's $40 for that.
I can't wait.
$40
I'm really excited to play that.
For physical. Released on November 11th.
A lot of the newer, inspired games look pretty good. There's a tank game that Mike Mika put on there that looks like a lot of fun. Yeah, like a four-player, combat, but...
Combat?
But evolved.
Combat with the tanks?
Yes. With the tanks.
That's my legacy when I die. Fucking combat memes. Jesus Christ. Was there a special edition of 51 or no? Was there, or just...
No, I think it's just normal.
Okay, I thought there was... No, there's a Steelbook edition.
Oh, there is. Okay.
There's a Steelbook, which looks... The Steelbook thing is funny, because I talked to Andre about it. Our buddy Andre, he likes getting the movies in Steelbook. I'm like, Andre, you know you're just paying extra for a metal case a lot of these, right?
I hate Steelbooks.
It's just a slipcover, right? That's what these things are. And they look cool.
My problem with Steelbooks is they look cool, but they scratch really easily.
Oh, is that right?
And that paint just comes right off.
So,
and Steelbooks look ugly as fuck when that starts to happen. I hated them at Luna.
The Steelbook is $50. It's $10 more.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get anything else with it? It's literally the cover. Is it literally just the cover?
Because
you can still pre-order the Steelbook. Like, it's not.
I know a lot of, say, for instance, limited run games. Like, there's the standard edition and there's the Steelbook, and it usually costs more.
Oh, you get a poster. You get the Steelbook and the Steelbook's just the cover. Yeah, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't love Atari that. If I loved Atari that much, I guess I would do it. It's gold. You get up here. You can see the poster here. You get a poster. That's what you get.
Sure, that's
but
cool.
But I'm gonna pick this up. This is how you do re-releases.
I'm very, very excited for it.
It comes full circle from they started doing this shit in the early to mid 90s with the Super Nintendo compilations, N64.
Poorly emulated bullshit games by Midway on there that don't have their proper controllers.
I bought it. I bought an Activision Atari one. I remember at Comp.
Actually,
Comp
the USA. The Activision Atari one was one that I did like back then because it was just loaded with bull. It was just loaded with them.
It probably had 15, 20 games. I probably bought it for $20 back in 1993 or 94. I probably bought it when I was in early high school, something like that. When they started doing this stuff. More of these games that were barely 10 years old at the time. I have something to talk about. That upset me last week.
Okay.
I take my candy seriously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I feel that I was embarrassed on the podcast, publicly shamed over my bag of candy and my claim that the Reese's Pieces packs were hard to open. And then Ian instantly opened the package and made me feel not like a man anymore. after that.
Ridiculous.
I was publicly shamed. I felt I was canceled in a way because of this. That I could not. People were saying Pat's weak. He's an idiot. He can't open it. So I went back and I went through. I rummaged through the rest of the Reese's Pieces. What did I find?
Two without notches.
Not one, but two without notches. No notch, Ian. No notch.
No notch there. Yeah.
No notch.
Can I see this one?
This one had the start of a notch, and it didn't go through. The start of a notch.
Yeah, that one does too.
Shame on you, Hershey's. Shame on you. Shame on you. You feel like you're in bed with someone with a condom wrapper. You get desperate. You got to use your teeth. Shame on you, Hershey's. Yeah. I should file a lawsuit. Class action with everyone. And I had a couple people comment that said, hey, Pat, mine didn't happen either. So this is an issue. You're not opening this without your teeth or something sharp. I tried. I'm not crazy. I am crazy, but not when it comes to this. You know what's readily accessible? Anything at oldnintendo.com you can get your hands on. Anything there. You can easily access the pins.
I'm not going to have to use your teeth to open those books.
No, you're not going to use your teeth to open them. If you could, that'd be awkward. There's certain guidebooks that weigh over 6 pounds, RBI baseball stickers, the limited t-shirts, all at ultimatenintendo.com. I'll be on Twitch Wednesday. Ian will not. Twitch.tv/Contry Code. And I'm on Cameo, cameo.com/Pat Contry. GameCom, Symphony of the Night was a thing. I didn't know about. Hidden Pals put out an article and they tweeted about this. I don't have a huge amount of thoughts about this. This is a Halloween thing they did for Happy Halloween. Do you have any thoughts on this? Ian, you like Symphony of the Night.
Yeah, I do. I haven't had a lot of chances to look into this yet, but I'm interested in it. I think it looks kind of decent.
What's the best you can say about a GameCom game is it looks kind of decent.
You actually have no idea how it's going to play. But I think it's very neat that they found it. And yeah, I mean, it does look kind of nice, but I bet you it's slow or choppy or whatever. And, you know,
well, there's video on there, but the video is not a direct feed from like an emulator. Is there a GameCom emulator? It must be. But
so I think that's one of the more important things is I think they're finally starting to get some emulation going on it. And I guess they've just recently learned how to dump the ROMs from GameCom games. Yeah, I think it was actually, I think that's a recent development. So,
well, that's interesting. Yeah. See, people don't care about GameCom. More of it's your fault out there for not caring about GameCom. I have never owned a GameCom. I always see it and I'm like, should I waste my money in a GameCom? I'm like,
no.
I don't think I should.
Nope, probably not.
Look at the animation, looks okay.
Don't see the animation. I just see the screenshots.
Scroll down, Ian. Scroll.
On Twitter?
No, the Hidden Palace article. It's right there. It's right. There's two different links there, Ian. Second link. There's two links on the document. Ian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I like
pull sorry.
Up. While you look at that, Carl Jobst, our pal, is getting sued by Billy Mitchell for a third time. I can't keep track.
It just hit that link again, Patrick. There's nothing there.
It's the second link, Ian. There's two links, buddy.
Yes, I'm there and I'm looking at it. There's no animation. There's six screenshots and some dancing skeletons.
Scroll down. Scroll. Scroll, and there's a YouTube video down there. That's so weird. It's not showing up for you. It's right here for me. That's what do you have? Like a JavaScript disabled on the page? That's weird. Okay, I'll put the link in, Ian.
I refreshed it. There it is.
Okay. Jeez, Ian. What type of computer? I thought it was an expensive laptop.
This is anyway. Really dark.
Well, it's because it's a capture.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a video of it being played. So, yeah, but it looks it's a port. So, anyway. This comes from thegamer.com, and there's a video that Carl put out. Billy Mitchell is suing Carl Jobst over two videos that refer to cheating allegations against him. So there's a video in question called Disgraced Gamer Billy Mitchell Accused of Extortion. In that video, Carl was not making any claims himself. He was just reporting on stuff that was going on. He reported on claims made by the current Dunk-Con world record holder, Robbie Lakeman, who had previously supported Mitchell against accusations that he cheated to get his own Dunk-Con record. Lakeman is now going against Mitchell, claiming that he used an emulator to get his record. The video covers Lakeman's claims that Mitchell was extorting a witness in one of his lawsuits with sensitive information in exchange for them defending him against allegations of cheating. Lakeman also revealed that he now believes Mitchell played it on illegitimate hardware backing his detractors. So Carl's reporting on this as a reporter, and there's protections, at least in the U.S., there are protections against defamation and libel and slander when you are reporting on something. So if I report on news that someone did something shitty, I cannot be sued if I'm just reporting on it, because that would be insane, because then you could try to sue reporters for talking about someone being charged with something or something being alleged. We have protections against that. I guess in Australia, unfortunately, they don't have those same protections for defamation, where you can easily sue people for frivolity, for stuff that would not get anywhere in courts in the U.S. In Australia, they have a chance, unfortunately, to that you need at least to get lawyers to do this. So that was the first sort of lawsuit. Then the second one is even somehow more ridiculous. Did you see this, Ian?
This is the angry video game nerd portion of the lawsuit.
Yes. So there was a video.
Just insane.
A video that Carl did called "I Cheated in Speedrunning and Need to Come Clean," which had nothing to do with Billy Mitchell. It was talking about how he submitted a score back to Nintendo Power magazines for an N64 game back in the day. And there's a meme that was included in here that's, I'll just play it here, that he included. This is a meme.
You're familiar with Billy Mitchell, world video game champion? He could probably do it. So I got to find a way to harness his power. And I think I found a way.
That's right. We're going to cheat.
So this is a meme that was created. It got millions of views, this meme. And it splices up two different AVGN videos, which are talking about Billy Mitchell. And then it splices to him using the Game Genie. And James's AVGN says, that's right. I'm going to cheat. So Carl included that as a joke in the video. So he's also getting sued for that on top of it. So these are frivolous lawsuits, but unfortunately,
hugely.
As he talks about in the video, he's already spent six figures on lawyers, Carl, for the other lawsuit. So there's a GoFundMe set up. I will link it. So please contribute even $10, because you can't allow people to sue others for absolutely nothing like this and try to, like, if you allow this to happen, people can be silenced because they don't have money to defend themselves, and you can't let this stuff happen. It's insane that it would come to that. And as Carl pointed out in his video, the person that made the meme hasn't been sued. You know, that's got millions of views, like the meme itself, the video that's right on YouTube. It's just nuts. There's also, I guess, Todd Rogers chicanery that we don't have time to go into, but there's other stuff going on with that as well. Check out Carl's videos in the past week and a half.
Nintendo Switch, real quick, has crossed 114 million units sold. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe nears 50 million units sold.
Wow.
That's like a 40% attach rate, 45% attach rate. That's insane.
Let's do the pat math on that directly. But that might be a record for attach rate. I have no idea, because I know that I think Mario Kart on the Wii hit about 30 million. I never got to 50. I think it got into the 30s. I believe. Right. Looked that up. So that's nuts. I mean, it's an amazing game. Like I said, I don't know if that could ever be topped for a Mario Kart. Like, I think it's a perfect game, personally. Yeah. I mean, it's still going strong. We're 5.5.
43% attach rate.
That's nuts. That's insane.
I'm sorry, 44% attach rate, round up.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Think about that.
One out of every two fucking Switch owners has this game.
And you're not counting for people that might own, like, households that own multiple Switches or get the Switch Lite. So that number, that attach rate, in essence, is even higher. I'm not saying it's going to go for 50, but it's probably a couple percentage points even higher than that.
Sure. Yeah, you're right.
Just think about right, your household.
Yeah, think about that. Yeah. People buy multiple systems.
Yeah.
For instance, we have it, but we have two systems in the house.
I have a Switch Lite and a Switch, and I have one copy of a Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. It's really, I'm not gonna harp on the fact that all those idiots that were wrong. I won't do that.
Not this time.
No. We should be happy for Nintendo, but it was a bigger turnaround than even people like us gave it credit for. We didn't think it'd be like a smash to this success, where you're talking about this maybe inching up to like PS2 records at some point if it keeps on this. Like, it could. I'm not saying it will, but it's nuts.
I don't think we're going to reach PS2, but it certainly gave it the old college try,
especially during a pandemic when for a while.
I feel like during the pandemic is what helped it more than hurt it, but it did. Affect supplies.
But they couldn't. There wasn't enough to sell though for a long time,
sure.
For like a year and a half.
Yeah.
even at the beginning, there wasn't enough to sell, obviously. It took me, I didn't get one until Mario Kart 8 came out. So that was like, what, 3 months in, 3-4 months in. That's when I finally found it. When I found it at, was it Target? Is that where I got it from, mine? Yeah, I think I got mine at Target, finally. I think that's what happened, yeah. I use that good old Target red card, get 5% off. I did. That's something I've, you know, Target's, I love Target because they send me in the mail once a year, hey, you haven't used your Target card in a while. We're going to shut it off.
Here's a coupon.
No, they say we're going to shut off your card if you don't use it.
Oh, really?
So I'm like, okay, I better use my Target card for something. So I find something to save because you get 5% off. So, yeah. So it was good for that because on a $300 item, you're saving, Pat Met, $15. So it's like, that's worth it to use the card on that. Yeah, so we'll see if it hits 120, 125. I think you got another couple of years in the Switch at this point. You got a couple of years left. It's not slowed down that much.
One or two.
Because you still have whenever the hell Metroid Prime 4 is going to come out. You still got that.
I bet you it gets pushed to the next console.
You think so?
Yes.
I think at this point they're going to do that. They're going to pull a Breath of the Wild on it. They're just going to say, no, we're going to wait like another year. I still think you're going to see a Star Fox. Either the old one's going to be redone from the Wii U, or they're going to do a new one. And yeah, you got a couple of bullets left in the chamber when it comes to the Switch. There's usually a lot going on for all of us during the holidays, buying gifts, sending out cards, baking cookies. Right about now, seasonal excitement or dread is really starting to settle in, especially for small businesses. Slaying through traffic to the post office, inbox more like a blizzard than a winter wonderland, rushing to send cards and gifts to your loyal clients. It's not too late to get your holiday mailing and shipping under control with Stamps.com. Sign up now and you'll be printing your own postage in minutes. Stamps.com is your one-stop shop for all your shipping and mailing needs. For more than 20 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. Get access to the USPS and UPS services you need to run your business right from your computer. No lines, no traffic, no hassle. Even save money with major discounts on USPS and UPS shipping rates, up to 86% off. Use Stamps.com to print postage wherever you do business. All you need is computer and printer. And if you need a package pickup, you can easily schedule it through your Stamps.com dashboard. Rates are constantly changing. With Stamps.com Switch and Save feature, you can easily compare carriers and rates so you know you're getting the best deal every time. And if you're running an online store, Stamps.com works seamlessly with all the major shopping carts and marketplaces. This holiday season, trade late nights for silent nights and get started with Stamps.com today. Sign up with promo code CUPODCAST for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code CUPODCAST. Support for today's CU podcast comes from True Classic. They have asked 100 men how they choose what shirt to wear in the morning, and the overwhelming response was that they open their closet, grab whatever's on top of the stack, and just put it on. Doesn't matter if it's the same colors or pants. They don't care. Don't be that guy. Put some more thought into it. True Classic is here to help you upgrade your wardrobe from the old shirts in your closet. For a limited time only, get 25% off True Classic with our exclusive link at trueclassic.com/CU podcast.
Some men always look good in t-shirts. Most companies make their shirts for those guys and forget everyone else with a normal body. True Classic designed tees to make all the fellas out there feel confident in their clothing. From gym rats to dad bods, with True Classic shirts, you'll get a lot of nods. I love wearing t-shirts. They're comfortable. They're easy to throw on. I really like trying to find basic t-shirts to wear as undershirts.
Uh-huh.
And True Classics are very soft and comfortable, and they fit the bill. True Classic tees taper off towards the bottom, but they fit tighter around the chest and shoulders. This is a good look for everyone, and it's easy to achieve. They give you the wide shoulder and taper bottom look that we're all looking for, and the quality is top-notch. True Classic offers other menswear as well, ranging from polos, workout shirts, boxer briefs. They make it super easy to build out your wardrobe with premium True Classic quality. And if you purchase a 6-pack or even a 3-pack, the price per shirt is far more reasonable than any of those marked-up premium brands you see floating around. And for our bigger listeners, they have long options for the tall guys and sizes up to XXL. True Classic also has a 100% risk-free guarantee with a 30-day return policy. The response to these tees is so overwhelmingly positive, with over 70,000 five-star reviews, there's no wonder that these shirts are quickly becoming men's go-tos. Skinny dudes, big dudes, buff dudes, all dudes, True Classic's got you covered.
Get 25% off with our exclusive link, trueclassic.com/CU podcast. Support our podcast and check them out at trueclassic.com/CU podcast. Free shipping is included on purchases over $100. Once you put True Classic on your back, that'll be your new favorite shirt stack. True classic. Ian.
Moving on into the meaty bit.
This is meaty. Thanks. Meaty. Thanks to, speaking of Carl, thanks to Carl for pointing out that a recent Heritage Auctions video game event happened November 4th and 5th. We'd like to report on this stuff because this is great, because it gets people to do counter videos and to argue with me in person and to send me emails and messages about this stuff. Let me just start by saying this once again, unequivocally. I don't care if you buy seal games. I don't care if you hold them. I don't care if you burn them. We talk about this because we talk about what we think shouldn't be worth this much money, market manipulation, obvious bubbles that we saw being created, now being bursting. This is why we talk about this stuff. We talk about this from the macroeconomic level. We don't get into more of the psychology about why you want to own a bunch of sealed games that you didn't care about 3 years ago when you could have bought them for pennies on the dollar. We don't talk about that too much.
Right.
We won't get into that because these games have existed forever. We don't talk about that. We talk about the things we see. So, Ian, there's another event here that happens, and I did the homework, Ian. This is why you like Pat. He works hard sometimes. I put down some of the results here. But let's start with, we're going to go with some of the higher price ones first that happened, just because, hey, we're going to present all sides of this. It's not all bad, even though a vast majority is really bad, really bad. There's a couple of really big auctions that went here in six figures. $720,000 for a Super Mario Brothers sealed. Got to hit it once.
Sealed!
9.6A. This is a mid-production, so it wasn't even an original one. So, okay. They're trying to bet that this is going to be, you know, the Detective Comics 27.
Right.
Right. That's what they're doing. But then what's stranger is the Mario Brothers. Regular Mario Brothers went for $264,000. So I like Mario Brothers, the arcade Mario Brothers. Ian, probably, you like Mario Brothers?
I like it in theory, and I get bored of it really quick.
The Famicom disc one that was ported to Europe was really good. Remember you played that in the marathon?
Yeah, yeah, that's better.
They fixed the controls. They made it a little more precise, and you can control your jump more. So here's the point about this. This person that spent $264,000 on this is betting that this is a discount, just because probably in their mind, well, Mario Brothers was the first game that had Mario on the cover. Maybe they think it was starring Mario. We're going to get into that. So it predates Mario Brothers by a couple of years.
Right.
Problem is, no one cares that much about Mario Brothers itself.
No.
It's only historically significant because it introduced Luigi. That's about it.
It's a neat single-screen arcade game, but it's not the reason why Mario is popular.
It's not the game that helped bring back the home video game market in North America. It's not the reason why the NES blew up.
Right.
It's more like an interesting, I don't want to say footnote, but it's a thing that happens, right?
Yeah.
It's like Donkey Kong 3. It happens. Right?
Yes, exactly.
We all love Stanley, but we're not going back and playing Donkey Kong 3. It didn't really help anything in the grand scheme of things. Like, it was a bridge game when Nintendo games were being published on Atari and other consoles. Like, okay, Mario Brothers gets this to the NES. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. It's a bridge between Donkey Kong
and Super.
And then a Mike Tyson's Punch-Out went for $78,000, as did a Tecmo Bowl. I love
that's
these,
insane. I love Tecmo Bowl, but holy shit.
But holy shit, is that off? In terms of any sort of significance.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's a game that, if you're an NES fan, you adore, even going into the 16-bit era. But that's a game that nowadays people just talk about it because they still update the ROM hacks and they do their Wisconsin tournaments once a year. That's not something to invest in to speculate on. Tecmo Bowl.
No. No.
And then you have other ones like Popeye. I love me some Popeye, 9.8, 62,000. So most of these are not going to be good investments, in my opinion, overall, but whatever. And then we get into, I guess, the ones we've been kind of been tracking over the past months and not. There's some NES ones here, Ian. I like looking at the NES ones just because there's still some semblance of sanity where the stuff that's actually rare, people are like bidding up to a point where it's like, okay, these are actually hard to get, and I put down one here. But let's start with like Final Fantasy. 9.4A went for $7,200. That's down from January, where it went for $19,200. Final Fantasy is not half. A rare game. It's a common game.
Or more than half of the value dropped.
More than half dropped, right? What is that? It's like 60-something. We've seen a lot of 70% drops. A Legend of Zelda, last production. So if you want to get one from, I don't know, the early 90s, whenever they last produced it, went for 11.4K. 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, it went for 15.6K. That's a drop of, what was that, 40%? Something like that.
Base is loaded.
I just put LOL Ian on this. I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, 3.3K base is loaded. 9.6A, no pluses.
No pluses.
I know people are really into the pluses.
A's probably still pretty good. When I got A's in school, I thought that was pretty good. That was a 90 out of 100. We didn't have minuses in my school. We just had A's and pluses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we didn't have minus. Who needs a minus? Just do A's and pluses and B's and pluses. 3.3 thousand. Base is loaded. I almost think that's funny that someone wanted to do that because it's one of the most ubiquitous games.
Mm-hmm. Everywhere.
That and Silent Service.
I could not ever get rid of Silent Service. Probably the most common fucking video game for the Nintendo.
You think so?
I mean, it's up there.
I just think people just probably sold it more than basically.
Yeah, sure.
But
Golf is also another one. Just piles and piles.
They made
of
golf forever.
Yeah.
That wasn't just one like they stopped making like in 86, 87, like a Clue Land. Golf they made forever. For whatever reason. I guess people like golf. I don't know, but there was like seven other golf games on the NES.
All of them better than original golf.
Lee Trevino's golf.
I mean, Nintendo's own NES Open was better than regular golf. I mean, I enjoyed regular golf when I first played it. It's fine. But
I think now I'm thinking about Nintendo probably is like, hey, we need to keep producing a golf game until we come out with a new one. Maybe that's right. Why we gotta make this game forever. And then here's the one that's actually legitimately rare. The Family Fun Fitness version of Athletic World went for 6,600, sealed. I own one not sealed. Again, this is the one that you can only buy thrown in literally with the Family Fun Fitness pay. Like no protection.
Yeah. Just
no protection.
A loose fucking cartridge.
Oh, no. It's boxed. But I mean like no cellophane seal on it. It wasn't in a holder.
I see.
They threw it next to
it. It was just
the
on
power,
top of the pad.
To the
right.
Pad. They just threw it in because I have one. I have a boxed pad, and I'm looking at it, and I've seen them in person. I'm like, there's no compartment to like protect the game. Like if you buy like an NES set, super set, there's a space for the cartridge or space for the Super Mario box for like the console set. They just threw the damn thing in. They threw it in. It's just funny to me. They might have done the same thing, I think, with the Power Pass set next to Mike Tyson over there, the standee. They just threw the game in, but that was just a cartridge at least. The cartridge is a manual. They just threw that in. So let's go to the N64 games, Ian. Why do the N64 games? Why do you think it interests me so much? Let me ask you. Why is this interesting to me? The N64 games. When we focus on the N64 games,
Well, I mean, a couple of reasons. One, you're doing the book on it, but two, N64 games are the most recent of the stuff that is kind of getting popular right now. So we don't really know what's out there.
True. I was thinking about the book. The reason
I was just joking about.
That. Oh, okay. The reason I think the N64 games are most interesting is because we know once you get to the N64 part, the games are easier to find in the box, easier to find sealed for sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we don't know what's out there. We know less about what's out there with the N64 than we do with the NES or the Super Nintendo.
When you say we know less, we realize that there probably is more. We just don't know how many.
Okay. Yes.
And also, it's nostalgic enough for the people that are now like in their early 30s to mid-30s, the people, the tech bros, the crypto bros, and the people that would put in money to buy us because they grew up with this stuff more so than the NES. It hits the age a little bit better.
Right.
But there's a lot of these out there in comparison to the NES games. A lot. That's the difference too. Even though they sold overall less, we'll get into it. We'll start with some of the lower ones. I did think about someone spending almost this amount of money. 4,000 on 1080 snowboarding. This is a common game. It's a Nintendo game. People forget that.
Mm-hmm.
First party. This was a 9.4A plus. A 9.6, slightly better grade. I went for almost 10 grand 2 months ago. It is a slightly better grade. But that's less than half of that. That's the only examples I found. Pokemon Stadium 2 went for 13.2K. Literally half of the values of that went for a year and a half ago. Literally half.
That's crazy.
A Pokemon Stadium 2 is like, to me, it's like, why would you try to take a risk on that? Because that wasn't people's first exposure to that game. I would understand the Game Boy ones versus Pokemon Stadium two. Not even, it's
weird. I think it's just taking a risk on anything Pokemon.
This is the one that our pal Carl pointed out to me because he loves GoldenEye. He's a speedrunner. This happened in only 2 months. A 9.6 A++ double plus went for 20,400. 2 months ago, in August, it went for 55.2. It was, I think, one of the last times we talked about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Holy shit. And I didn't even look past that, what it went for. But when you're talking a $35,000 drop in 2 months, people, we talked about panic a couple months ago. Now we're just in the offloading portion.
Sure.
We're trying to get that. Or people trying to sell what they still have laying around at that point. And then we get to the insane one that I don't think we have touched upon it much. You want to go over this? You know, I feel like I'm rambling.
The Super Smash Brothers?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Super Smash Brothers has this one's nuts. It's absolutely plummeted. I'm going to go backwards here. In July of last year, it was 144K.
This is a 9.4 A++, by the way.
72K is what it went for in January, so about 6 months later.
So it halved.
Yep, it halved. Then in April, it went for 50.4K, so it lost $22,000 in the span of 4 months.
That was just one plus now, but all right.
Oh, that was just one plus. Okay.
Still the same grade.
But here we go. A 9.4 A++ just sold for 15.6K.
That's...
And so was the July one the same grade as the one that just sold?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, it doesn't matter because that's a... Yeah, it wouldn't matter unless it was a 0.6.
It was the same grade.
Yeah. So that is...
That would be 9.4. Yeah, 9.4 A++. That's an 89% drop. Pat math. That's 100... You do 131 divided by 144.
You're faster with that on your phone.
What's that?
You're faster with the math on your phone than I am on the laptop.
131 divided by 144. It's like 90%, something like that. That's insane. So what are you thinking if you're the person that got into this? Hell, if I got into for even 50,000 or 72,000, I'd feel sick to my stomach that I lost tens of thousands of dollars. What if you just bought it 16 months ago at 144? And you see that you've lost $130,000.
I mean, what do you do? I feel like most of the people who are doing this have the money to throw around, but that's just, I mean, you can't argue that this is a safe investment.
No, but you also can't argue that at some point, well, we just care about, these people cared about just getting these games to have them. Because again, the 15,000 is what you probably could have bought this for a few years ago, or less than that.
Less than.
So, I don't know, Ian. I'm a game collector. It took me years to get some of the games I got because I didn't want to overspend.
Right.
I still wanted them. It would be nice to have them, but I knew that I could be patient and find them. And so it just goes to show you that if you really are a collector, patience does have something to do with it. Because if you just want to have it at some point... These aren't games that only come up once. It's not like getting an NWC card where, like, I may have another opportunity. Like, when the gold card came up, I had one opportunity to get one in my life. So I had to take it.
Right.
For this stuff, you obviously have multiple opportunities to get this stuff, even in other grades. That might be off a little bit in your eyes.
Yes, because, again, as we've mentioned, this is not rare stuff that's going for money. In the grand scheme of things.
They're not rare.
They're focusing on the popular, not the rarity.
Sure. And then you can always go, call me crazy. You can still find some of these games that aren't graded. You can find collectors.
Sure.
You can find private dealers. You can talk to people that own game shops. If you really just want to get the game and don't want to overspend, you can find avenues to do this because you will overspend on something graded versus not. We've seen that in other things with comics, cards. It always happens.
Yeah.
So again, it goes back to the argument that it really is not about collecting anymore. It isn't.
Well, it's just an investment.
Get in early.
Get in early.
Hey, make sure you spent. Hey, you had to spend $144,000 in July of last year because it's going to be worth $300,000 in a year, Ian.
Yeah.
Hey, look at it. It's going up in price. It used to be only $5,000 probably or $3,000. Now it's $144,000. It's going to be worth $1 million to the moon. Nope.
Let's talk real. I want to mention Sonic real quick.
Oh, I want to talk real quick about the streamer thing.
Oh, you can. Before we get into that, I just want to mention that Sonic, because I feel like that can be. Yeah, it's a second chunk. Sonic went for the 9.6A. So we had a nine. It's easier to do it this way. A 9.8A plus went for 360K in April. A B plus in August 5th was 240. A B plus was 312 on October 29th. 9.8 went for 360K in April. And then 102K in August. 9.6 just sold 38.4K.
So basically, you went from a game, this A, 9.6A. If you even take out the $360,000 9.88 plus, you want to say, hey, it was worth $50,000 more for a 0.2 and a plus. Sure. A game went for $312,000. That's now worth $38,000. Holy fuck. That person dropped $280,000+, that investment, in a year, in 1 year. In 1 year. Like, if you invested it in Bitcoin, it wouldn't have done that bad.
Yeah.
That's another like 90%. Is that a 90% drop? It's like, it's 80%. It's ridiculous. God,
it's close. Yeah.
It's nuts. So there's this streamer called Ms. Kiff that started getting into these games, I was informed, within the past couple years. Like a lot of these speculators. They're one of the bigger streamers. They make a lot of money. So they've done a video saying, hey, I got these games worth $100,000. This one's worth $200,000, whatever. So there's a video that came out of them tracking. This isn't their games that they've auctioned, but they're tracking what they have live on Twitch from this latest auction. And they lost, just on the values on this, if you look at, like, they had like a little text pad open.
Yeah.
You see what they lost? They lost like, it's like $200,000, something like that. It's like six figures they lost based upon what they bought everything out. Like, you can see them. Let me just do this.
I can do it. So Super Mario Brothers 3, it sold for 9K less. Super Mario RPG, it started at 15,000, finished 9K less. Super Mario RPG 85 plus was 25,000. It finished 15K less. Pokemon Blue finished, went up 5K. Red went up 5K. Yellow went from 13,000 down 8K.
Finished
at 13,000. That's down 8K.
A Game Boy console went for 1,000 less. A Pokemon Silver went for -3K.
And then that's just where it starts.
And so then you get to the big ones. Mario Party 1, 20,000 less. Super Smash Brothers, 15,000 less. The Pokemon ones went up a little bit. One went up 8,000. So the point is this. Yeah, we're talking, this is like low six figure losses just on this one, it looks like, on this collection. Maybe it's like about 100. So this person got into this. They look younger than me, and they probably did not know how ubiquitous some of these titles were. They probably didn't know that, hey, N64 stuff is not like NES stuff, and got in and they lost a bunch of money.
Yeah.
A bunch. And this is the reaction to the Ocarina one, which I'll talk about specifically.
Legend of Zelda 5, go to 14. Looking for any action beyond 13.5. And 13.5.
Hello!
Jesus Christ.
So, internet bitter. So Ms. Kiff was watching a game he had just plummet in value, the Ocarina of Time. That's why he screamed.
Yeah.
But there was also another one he mentioned during this that dropped. I think he mentioned the Super Smash Brothers. I believe that was another one. But we didn't also talk about the Mario Kart during this.
Dropped like 5K.
Mario Kart 9.6A plus sold for 26,400. That was $144,000 in April with an extra plus. $144,000. This was the one that they were complaining about on Instagram.
Gotcha.
This is the one that, like, that you keep auctioning this off.
Right.
So it goes from 144,000 down to, we talked about it, went to 48 in September, went to 31. That's when we talked about it. So it just keeps going down. Each one that comes out, it's going to keep going lower because there aren't enough people, again, collectors that care about this to drop this sort of coin on this. There aren't.
They failed at bringing in more people.
They brought in Mizkif, but Mizkif had a lot of money. And
at some point, you can't bring in more people, yes. And then you're left with the people who are holding the bag.
There's only so many people out there that can...
A tale as old as time.
There's only so many people that can risk this insane amount of money. And even Mizkif is probably okay losing this amount of money. It hurts to lose this amount of money.
Sure.
It'd be like the same if I went and gambled. I've lost several hundred dollars gambling at one time. It hurts. I can take the hit, but it hurts. It still hurts there. So not much more to... I'm gonna. We didn't do this for this. That's for the Sonic. The Sonic is still probably, out of all these, the worst fucking investment. That Sonic. The most common Genesis game. Yeah, because that's dropped... almost $300,000.
I mean, not for resale copies are harder to find, but sure. That's about it.
It's still common. I mean, come on, you're killing me. That's still the biggest loser. I think the Sonic one out of all of this.
Absolutely. I agree.
Especially since those seals are awful anyway on Genesis games. They're always...
No, they're gross. They're bad. The plastic poke, or the case pokes through the plastic.
The hard plastic. I mean, cracks on the corners.
Genesis cases are amazing, but collecting sealed Genesis games must be a fucking nightmare.
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
It doesn't make any sense. Ian, we have a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU Podcast. You go. You check out what we can offer you.
You do more than just go.
You part with a little cash. We appreciate that, and you can get access to the bonus podcast.
The bonus,
you get hangouts. We'll be doing one not this weekend because I'll be gone, but next weekend you get access to these poll topics. You get the full video podcast. You get writing about once a week. There's one that's going to go live just after we finish here, and Pin Club.
Pin Club on top of it.
Forgetting
all right.
Anything else?
I don't know.
I think I got it.
I'm zoning out from talking about prices of sealed games that people lost a ton of money on. All right. In second place on this poll topic, thoughts on VR and the new PSVR 2 price tag, 37%. Rock the vote. It's election day. First place, 63%. The PC Engine turned 30 years old, Ian. We did not talk about it last week. We should have.
35.
I'm sorry. That's right. It's 87.
Yeah. 35.
Did I put down the wrong thing on the poll? I did. I wasn't called out on that. Oh. Thoughts and reflections on the good old PC Engine turning 35. That white and black console.
PC and white and red, like orangey to start with. The logo is orange. The console is white.
Wasn't there black on the controller? Whatever.
Oh, there's like gray. Yeah. So the PC Engine came out October 30th, 1987. It is one of my most favorite systems up there with the original Game Boy. I love it to death. It's one of the few systems I still hold a physical collection for, and it will probably be the last physical collection I ever get rid of if I get rid of my stuff. It was kind of weirdly positioned as an in-between, you know, the 8-bit era and the 16-bit era. It processed, I believe it was colors and graphics based. It has an 8-bit central processing unit and a 16-bit graphics processor. So it's definitely more powerful than the Famicom or the NES, but it wasn't quite to where the Genesis was or the Super Nintendo.
In some respects, yes.
Yes, in some respects. It was loaded, and it's famous for having, the card. The games on
the Hue card. Or Turbo Chip, as they branded it in the U.S.
And that, you know, was a novel way of packaging your games that I think really helped make that system stick out in people's minds, especially when it was advertised in the U.S. Something like that for a system that is, you know, unfortunately positioned in a difficult place in the U.S., that is something that at least stands out, keeps it in people's minds.
Yeah, because it's unique, because there's nothing else that ever looked like that.
Right. Japanese version had a number of Hue cards. I think it's somewhere in the 400s. And then they introduced the wildly popular CD add-on. It was popular in Japan.
And the first one of any console.
Yes, first one of any console. And they did bring that over to the U.S., but it didn't really gain the traction that it did in Japan. A fraction of the games that were ever released on CD, and I mean a minuscule fraction, ever came out over here. How many games came out over on the came out over here for the
30 something for CD?
Really? Okay, that's more than I thought. I thought it was like 20 something.
94 Turbo Chip. So the problem with the CD, we're going to go back and forth. The CD was super expensive. I think it was $250 in the U.S. We're talking that's in 90, $250.
Right.
That's a ton of money for an add-on, not even a standalone, for an add-on. That's nuts.
It says 45. So I looked it up. The PC Engine CD has a total of 417 licensed games for the PC Engine CD, and 45 were localized for the TurboGrafx.
A 417 for total, not just CD.
No, 417 for just CD. It's what it says. And only 45 were officially localized for the TurboGrafx CD.
Wow, that seems like it's a high number. But okay. I got to double check that. But okay. So what's interesting to me about this is that this was during the time the TurboGrafx 16, where you were still so married. The games that you bought were so married to your console, but TurboGrafx took it to this unfortunate extreme that hurt it, because, you know, NES and Genesis, they're different generations of consoles. So you can see why they would not have the same library. But the TurboGrafx was even more unique in that, like, it shared, at least in North America, it shared almost no games in any other platform. Like, it just didn't.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot that crossed over.
Rare exceptions. You had Bonk's Adventure on the NES, but it was a late release. No one cared about it on the NES. And then, other than that, though, you run out of ones that, or like Darkwing Duck or Tailspin, where they're not the same games as the NES, so they don't count. Obviously, in Japan, it was the library was much bigger. You had more crossover stuff. You had like Rondo of Blood versus Castlevania X, for example. You know, so you did have some of those that happened there. But it was still like, when you look at a TurboGrafx 16 game, for most of the part, you can say immediately, that's a PC Engine game. Just how it feels.
Yes, they all have a very specific feel, look, and sound. As much as I love the TurboGrafx, the PC Engine, the main unit did not have a particularly impressive sound chip.
Sure.
It wasn't until the CD add-on came out and people started getting Redbook audio that we were like, wow, the power of CDs.
Sure.
There was also a heavy anime focus. A lot of games that came to the PC Engine that didn't have any anime theming elsewhere would get anime theming added. R-Type, for instance, has an intro with an anime lead character as the pilot. Wow. Hellfire S for the PC Engine, as opposed to the Genesis version, has like anime characters attached to it and another anime intro. And I think Aero Blasters is the same. I don't think there was any real anime theming on the Genesis version, but I could be wrong. So there was definitely like a specific style that they shot for. As far as a system goes, like with a cohesive overall feel, I think when you look at the library, the PC Engine really nailed that.
Sure.
And I think it's because they had a couple of, you know, very prolific publishers, which also stayed within their own style.
Yeah, Hudson Soft did a lot of games, obviously.
Yeah, Hudson Soft, Amusement Vision, Red, like all of those companies did quite a bit.
I'm looking at some of the other ones that came up a lot. Data East looks like did some. Keeps coming up. Again, looking at the Japanese, because the U.S. one, notoriously the U.S. was mostly, you know, first-party games, too much to the detriment of the system, unfortunately. So the TurboGrafx 16, I mean, it was successful in Japan, obviously, very successful. His library, 676.
So 676 games, 412 of which were CD.
Okay, that's different Wikipedia. Wikipedia says 679 and then 389. So still a lot of CD.
So
that's like more than half the library in Japan, which means that you had to get a CD to get the most out of it.
And I always say that to people when people want to get into TurboGrafx. I always say, if you aren't collecting specifically because it's the TurboGrafx, go with the PC Engine, and you always go with a duo unit because literally half your library is CD.
What the hell? I wonder what it cost back then, the CD unit in Japan, that they sold so many of it. I'm really interested in knowing that. And obviously, they had three or four different versions of the CD you can get.
Well, the system was just wildly more popular. And I have a feeling that also, keep in mind that when this came out, what actually probably moved this a lot was it was a CD player.
Sure.
I mean, we're forgetting
87, 88. Yeah.
Yeah, we're forgetting it. It's just like the PS2, where when the PS2 had DVD functionality, it came out at a time where DVD was becoming more popular. It wasn't already like a thing. So people bought it for the DVD player. People bought that CD unit for the PC Engine.
That was 88 December.
To play CDs.
So we're talking late 88, getting a CD player. Not many people had one yet.
Right.
They were super expensive standalone. You're probably right about that if you can put that in. So the first one's released. Good old Fighting Street, also one of the first ones released here. Yeah, you had Fighting Street. You had, let's see, Bikuramon Dajikai. So those were the first couple ones that came out that December there. And a game called Noriko. Those are the first few ones that came out.
I think
out.
That was a horror RPG.
Not familiar. So they had a good...
Oh, no. It's like a full motion video thing where like you interact with like a teenage girl.
Oh, okay.
Weird.
Well, okay.
Dating simulation.
Okay. Well, that was one of the first games. They knew their audience. Dating sims are still hugely popular in Japan today. So they had a good year head start on the Sega Genesis in Japan, the Mega Drive, and they had 2 years head start on the Super Famicom. So they had a chance to get ingrained. When it came out here,
they were playing catch up. They
were playing catch up for the Genesis. Well, the Genesis then were neck and neck. But the Super Nintendo, they also had a head start, but they didn't bring the games over here.
Right.
They just didn't.
Nope.
So it was slim pickings, as it was for me, I got it the Christmas of 90.
I always liked the TurboGrafx. Like, I always thought it had some cool games, and it definitely did. But when, it wasn't until later in life, maybe like 5 years ago, when you finished up your set, and I started really looking at it, because I didn't collect TurboGrafx. I jumped right into PC Engine, 15, 20 years ago. And looking at what was actually brought over here in the U.S. for the TurboGrafx, they were not the best picks.
No.
They were not... providing their best men.
No.
It's really not that great of a library.
No, we can talk about how bad it was. Going back to the forums, talking about, like, it was always the communication between the U.S. side and the Japanese team, from what I know, and that they obviously requested for other games to come over, but, like, you got only one platformer of note on the entire console. Like, one mascot character, Bonk. In North America, that's unacceptable. If you want to make a go of it, you cannot rely on shooters to sell a console in North America, and that's all you have. Like, you can't do that. There's not enough people out there that just want shooters. If you're a little kid, you want platformers, you want colorful characters. There wasn't enough of them. There just wasn't, and there wasn't enough games to fill the holes. We always talk about infamously how they never came out with Street Fighter 2 here, and that's a death knell for the console when your two competitors
should have been, especially because
in Japan.
I think it beat the other versions to the maybe it didn't beat the other versions to the market, but it was a great version.
Does great in Japan. 6-button controller just for that in Japan. That's the reason why they came out with it.
No, I mean, there's other games that
used. But I mean that was the impetus, though. Like, come on,
of course,
So. And when you look at that version, it's a great version. It stands toe-to-toe with the... You can say it's better than the Genesis one. Visually, it is. And it stands toe-to-toe in accuracy in terms of... It has the barrels in it. The barrel bonus round. You don't have that in the Super Nintendo. You just got the cars, for example.
Great sound.
Yeah. Controls are great. Controls fine.
Snappy. The only thing, it just loses some animation in the background. That's
it. Elephants.
I was gonna say you lose a row of elephants in the.
It actually has more accurate arcade music than the Super Nintendo.
Accurate sound all around.
But the biggest thing, one of the bad things,
and it has that fat little Who card. It's pretty. Have you ever seen it? It's thick. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, what's interesting? Before I get into it, it's really interesting how you can almost say the TurboGrafx 16 was the first console to do like the mid-generation shift. With the upgrades?
Sure. Because, in addition to having the PC up,
CD upgrade.
The CD upgrade, they then went on to release basically RAM packs that you would use to upgrade the functionality.
Super System card, arcade card.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Exactly.
So, you don't have to buy a new console to get these technically more powerful games, you had to buy just the card, which probably wasn't that much money at the time compared to probably like as most as a full game would have cost. But then, hey, now I can get a little bit better graphics going.
It's absolutely how they stretched it out for as long as they did. Because that system had an incredibly prolific run from 87, I think,
until 94, according to Wikipedia.
94.
That's 8 years.
And I think a few things still trickled out afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. So you had an 8-year solid run in Japan, in the U.S. Really, in the U.S., you really had like
a couple of years. Really 3 years.
I want to say 3 years of significance.
I think that's about all I'd give it. Yeah.
When you went to TTI, when they took it over in the U.S., at that point,
we were done.
You're doing like fucking mail order games mostly. I mean, you're still putting games in stores, but I don't remember games even by 93, 94 being in stores. Probably like maybe like Electronic Boutique. I don't remember them being in Toys R Us anymore, but I really had to scratch my head and think about that.
First time I ever saw them, they were in Toys R Us, but yeah, probably didn't. Oh, no. They probably didn't stay there.
I know they were. Oh, they're absolutely there. I bought them there, and they had their kiosk. But I mean, like by like a couple years into the Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah, no.
I don't think
those were gone.
Toys R Us probably realizing we're not selling any of these anymore. So yes, it was the first iterative console to that extent. I mean, technically the CD is a different platform, but having the cards switching out for the arcade and Super System was significant. And then, but the killer that they didn't figure out, at least in the US, was the one controller port that they probably should have done. They redesigned the console to be bigger for no reason. They probably should have put a second controller port on there.
Yes.
And I really, thinking back of how much that hurt the console, because I own a TurboGrafx 16, but I couldn't share the games or have, there's no two player action until I went out and bought $50. $40 to $50 of the TurboTap was. I think it was 40.
Jeez, that is expensive.
So you got to spend $80 on an extra controller and the TurboTap to make it a multiplayer console. On top of the fact that this console started off at $200 to $250. That was bad. Really fucking bad.
Yeah, and I can see a lot of US parents like looking at it and being like, this console has two controller. Okay, we're doing this. Stupid little nickel and dime shit like that never works in video games.
Yes.
At least not in the US.
No.
But the Vita was another prime example of it. Hey, here's the system, it's $250. Also, we're using proprietary memory, and if you want enough to do anything, you've got to pay another $50 to $60. That does not it's the stupidest, most short-sighted business decision, because like I said, it never works.
No.
It destroys these systems in the US.
You can't upsell so much that you're charging almost 50% of the value of the console. Well, even when it was started to mark it down to like 150 and 100, but it was dead by then. But when they started marking down to like 100, and you get like two or three pack-in games, we'll give you Bonk for free. Let me tell you something again about Keith Courage. Again, one of the only games in the history of consoles where the pack-in game was never available separately for a reason. It's not a bad game.
No, it's not a bad game at all.
But no one was going to say, I want to play Keith Courage that badly.
Right.
Like, no one ever, like, I guess you can count Wii Sports, but that's a totally different thing. They put that in, they packed it into tens of millions of consoles. I don't think.
Well, and Wii Sports was great. People would have bought that separately.
Correct. But Nintendo, they never bothered, I guess, at that point.
Because they
put out a sequel anyway. So it's like, what's the point? So I don't count that because they sold it. But for a console like that in the 80s and 90s, not to have it available separately says so much to me. That like it was such a misfire to include that game as a pack. At that point, you might as well have there's a coupon saying choose from one of three or four games to get. Immediately, Bonk's Adventure should have been a packing game. Immediately,
yes.
And it wasn't.
Absolutely,
and it wasn't. So all these little missteps, this is turning into more why the TurboGrafx failed versus what the PC Engine succeeded. But no multiplayer out of the box. You have to spend $100 to get multiplayer almost. Not enough platformers and mascot characters. When you get your mascot character, like Sega did, they immediately said, we're going to push this and make it a packing game.
Yep, we're going to take this guy to the moon.
To the moon. Bonk, I'm not saying Bonk would have been ever as popular as Sonic, but it could have been even a little bit more. A little bit more. I did not own Bonk's Adventure, and I should have. It should have been marketed to me and given to me, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't. And it was out. The game was out. Yeah, it's a shame. Real shame.
Back to the more positive stuff. PC Engine, favorite system. Loads and loads of shooters on it, which is why I loved it, or why I still love it. And in Japan, it is not. the type of game doesn't really, it's not platformer. It's, remember when we were doing the NES book and we had a tough time sometimes distinguishing between like platformer and action and stuff like that?
Sure.
It seems fairly easy to distinguish that. There are a lot of action games, like the Valis games on the PC Engine, and there is platforming, but I think
it's not those, heavy platforming.
I think of those as more action games, where there actually is quite some heavy platforming.
It's an action platform. You can say it's a cross genre.
But all I'm getting at is, as long as you broaden your description a little bit, tons and tons of platformers on the Japanese version. That just never came here. All sorts of fun little quirky, rough around the edges platformers that I fucking adore. Like,
we got Pac-Land here, which is like,
I like Pac-Land but it's not going to carry the fucking system.
And it's not a game a 4-year old can easily pick up and play.
No, it's actually a very weird game with kind of awkward controls and
awkward mechanics.
Yeah,
I like it, but it's
so
not.
Do I.
It's not like picking up Super Mario Brothers. And
no,
here you go.
No,
you get your ass kicked in Pac-Land.
It is not a Super Mario replacement.
It's a quarter muncher.
Yes.
And you got JJ and Jeff, which I never really played or got into, if you want to consider that.
I've heard that's good, but I haven't played it either.
But that's not going to appeal to kids. Like, who are these two idiots with sunglasses and a suit? Like, that's not going to appeal to kids. So it seemed like they went too far to the, we'll market to the teenagers versus you still have to market to children.
I think that
Genesis still had games geared towards children.
I think that might be part of the problem as well. In Japan, acceptance of video games was always a little bit more, it started off a little bit older, whereas we really had to work it up here. So they probably tried to go for a similar, marketing route over here that was working over there. And over here, video games were still largely seen as kids' stuff. So something like Bloody Wolf and Splatterhouse don't make the most sense.
Yeah, and obviously the marketing here sucked. We know that. It wasn't released nationwide. It wasn't released in major markets. It was North Jersey and New York, so I was lucky enough to have
some. Lots of bad cover art.
Terrible. And then to this day, North American commercials for specific games, Bonk's Adventure, Splatterhouse, Legendary Axe, and I'm running out of commercials that came out. I don't remember. They had ones for the whole system where you see mobile. But I mean like game-specific commercials.
Yes. Where you're not just trying to get people to buy the system.
Which is bad. It's bad. I've never seen the Splatterhouse one. I don't remember. I know there's a Bonk's one, I believe. But I don't remember even seeing. I'm trying to remember if I've ever seen that one. Because that came out December of 90. That's when I won my... Excuse me. No, that came out December 89. I got my console December of 90. I remember they were still pushing Bonk then, trying to advertise it in the newspaper in the giveaway thing.
Yeah.
But they gave me Bloody Wolf for some reason instead of Bonk. Like, again, just really just messed up thinking. But we love it. It's a quirky system. A lot of firsts. We love our firsts. Ian loves his shooters on it. Good for Fire Pro in Japan.
Yep.
Imagine there was Fire Pro in the U.S. Imagine 10-year-old Pat. I would have been in heaven playing that game. Would have been in heaven. Because I not that I didn't like the NES wrestling games. I thought they were okay, but they never like hooked me in where I had to own one. I'd rent WCW and was like, okay, I'm done with it. I play pro wrestling. Okay, that's enough pro wrestling. They weren't as deep as obviously Fire Pro. I was like, holy crap. Let's get into the move sets. Let's get into this. All right, well, that was fun. We'll see you in 5 years for the 40th. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by EarthySelect.com, your source for the finest Delta 8, Delta 9, and Delta 10 THC flower, oils, pre-rolls, vape pens, cartridges, and edibles. Their premium adult-use products are crafted from organic cannabis and infused with pure and potent THC extracts for effects you can feel.
Delta 8, Delta 9, and Delta 10 THC products are perfect for relaxing, socializing, and getting creative. Plus, they are hemp-derived and federally legal to ship nationwide. Let's look at some of their most popular goodies. Earthy Select's Delta 8 vape pens are packed with potent Delta 8 plus cannabis-derived terpenes. They have a stealthy ergonomic design that gives you a quick hit with no lag, making it perfect for gaming. Each rechargeable pen has 1 gram of Delta 8 THC and is available in 4 great-tasting flavors like Guava Kush or my personal favorite, Cherry Pie. I love these vapes. They pack light and are excellent on the go. Earthy Select also makes THC gummies and candies that are organic, vegan, gluten-free, and taste great. They all come in different strengths, so you can start low and see what's right for you. The Delta 8 gummies can be really relaxing, while the Delta 10 is more associated with feeling productive and creative, so it's great for daytime projects or like an all-night role-playing session. The Delta 9 gummies are really impressive. They have real-deal Delta 9 THC, and they come in sativa peach or indica mango.
They have a huge variety on the website, so check it out. EarthySelect.com. All of Earthy Select's cannabis products are federally compliant, and they ship nationwide. Order online at earthyselect.com and use the coupon code CUP20 to save 20% on your first order. No limits. Must be 21 or older. That's earthyselect.com and use code CUP20 to save 20% on THC. Earthy Select. Select your adventure. We got Anchor voicemails. Go to anchor.fm/CUPodcast. You go. You leave a voicemail. You let us know you love or hate us, but within 20 seconds. That's all I ask. That's all I ask. If you're going to hate us, hate us quickly, and what, love us quickly? It doesn't sound too good.
Hi, Ian and Pat. It's Aaron here once again. I've noticed a lot of Platinum release PS1 and PS2 games slowly going up in price. I believe you call them greatest hits in your part of the world. I've been given various reasons for this, from the dwindling supply of the Black Label games, the general better condition of the Platinum titles, some releases getting bug fixes, and I've even been told by some sellers they're worth more due to rarity. I just wondered what both your opinions are regarding this, as the Platinum variant was a cheap way to start playing for the early PlayStation consoles, at least here in the UK. Thank you once again.
Very good. Very good information in that, Aaron. I did not know that was a market on the rise. Yes, you're going to find, obviously, by the time it takes for something to get to be a greatest hit, you have to sell a lot. So obviously the rebrand is going to be less made of them. Absolutely. It makes sense for the most part.
It depends. Really popular games might get a couple of print runs after their first one. So you're going to be you will end up with more greatest hits. I cannot remember my specific examples because I've been out of Luna now for over a year. There were a couple examples I had on the PlayStation 1 where people were always like they wanted the Black Label. They wanted the Black Label because it was, you know, the rare version. But like there are some games where the greatest hits version is far more rare.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it maybe only got like one print run or a small print run, so it's harder to find the greatest hits version.
They called it a greatest hits even if it's a small print run. That'd be interesting.
Any sort of re-release is a greatest hits.
They just called it greatest hits.
Yeah, was a greatest hits.
Okay. Most of the stuff like on the N64, the million sellers.
Those were million sellers, yeah.
So there's less of those than the previous ones. I did not know about bug fixes being an impetus for that. I haven't heard of that specifically. I think there's
only like 12 PS2 games that actually have major differences. But there are some. And then famously, the Devil May Cry 3 has actual added content to it. So people will oftentimes go for the greatest hits on that more than the standard release.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Ed from San Diego.
Ed!
I recently went through the guidebook, I wrote down all the 5-star games. I'm going to read them off to you, and I want you to both let me know if this is your official top 20 games for the NES.
What?
Baseball Stars, Contra, Dragon Warrior 4, DuckTales, G.I. Joe, I believe that's the
first one.
Taxon version. Guerrilla War, Gunknack, Kirby's Adventure, Legend of Zelda, Maniac Mansion, Mega Man 2, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, Mr. Gimmick, Ms. Pac-Man, Pirates, River City Ransom, Super Mario Brothers 1, 2, and 3, and Tecmo Super Bowl. So again, if you either of you disagree with any of these, I just wanted to know what your take was on the official guidebook. 5-star top 20.
What's the take on? I mean, like, I reviewed half of those. I think
that's a great list of games, but it wouldn't be my top 20 because there's some stuff in there that I'm just honestly I don't love Maniac Mansion on the NES. Playing a game like that with a controller sucks.
That I think who reviewed that one? Did Karen review that one?
I mean, it's
Karen reviewed that.
It's a perfectly fine version. Like, there's nothing wrong with it, but I just don't want to play games like that on a control pad.
Sure, but if you look at it probably within the NES library, it's probably the best type of that one. Maybe that's what Karen was thinking. I'm not in love with Maniac Mansion enough to know if that's 4.5 or 5.
Anyway, I think those are all fair 5-star reviews, but I would not necessarily agree with all of them. No.
Well, you gave Zelda 2 only 4.5, Ian. Do you regret that? Versus 5?
Yes, but I figured you'd try to shout me down on it, so I said no.
Why do you think I would do that? You want to? Yeah, there's gonna be another edition eventually. You want?
I think 4.5 is probably fair.
It's the only full page review that's not 5 stars in the book.
I love Zelda 2, but there are some fucking issues with it, and the life system is number one. Just, I mean, it's silly.
I feel bad that no Koei game got 5 stars. They were reviewed by, I think, 2 writers reviewed all of the Koei games, And I feel like it's unfair not to have one of those Koei strategy games get 5 stars just because they were all very high quality. A lot of them hit 4, 4.5 stars. And I would think that one of them would be above the rest. That's the only regret I have, is that I don't know enough about those games
when
I got into them to know that maybe Genghis Khan 2 or Le Emperor, or, you know what I mean? Like, is there one that's the shining one, even though they're all very well-made games.
Let's move on before this turns into a poll topic.
We can get into it. But the only one I'm going to say is that G.I. Joe, I gave 5 stars, the first one. The second one, I gave 3. I did not believe how much of a drop-off there's going to be. I wonder if I might have been a half star more in G.I. Joe. I want to go back and maybe play it again.
I think that was my strain. To me, that was the weirdest 5-star, because I like the game, but I don't think it's anywhere near 5 stars.
Okay. That might have been a G.I. Joe bias of a half star.
I think it was.
That is one, but the second one is definitely not nearly as good.
No. The second one's bad. I would argue
it's not a bad game.
I played a lot of it as a kid because my neighbor hated it and lent it to me and never like really asked for it back. But I don't think it's a good game.
Okay, I think it takes a hit. It's still above average game.
Starts off really hard.
And then the other one that I think about, the reason I gave Miss Pac-Man, the Tengen version, 5 stars. There's so many options in that game.
It's great.
There's so, like, they went so above that for just a game where the regular license, Namco release is just, hey, here's just the game. Great. The Tengen one gives you speed up mode. It gives you all the different maze options. It gives you 2-player simultaneous and competitive.
And the Genesis version's even better.
Oh, they've added more of that because it's also Tengen.
It's the NES version, but 16-bit and nice.
Like, you'll never need another Miss Pac-Man game than that Tengen home port. Like, you'll never need it. That's why I gave it 5 stars. And then Ian gave 5 stars at Gunnack because the previous writer didn't know what they were doing.
That's right. Yeah.
You're like, I'm gonna save that review, and I'm like, go for it.
I had to save that review. That was imperative.
But nice to have someone actually review it with some sensibility. Next one here.
Hey guys, Brandon from Michigan. My question is about all the counterfeit video game listings that are all over eBay. What can be done about these? It seems like whenever I search for games anymore, there's just as much counterfeit stuff as there is legitimate stuff. And eBay's answer to me whenever I report listings is, unless the actual copyright holder makes a complaint, there's just not much they can do about it. So should eBay be doing more on their own initiative? Should companies like Nintendo be complaining? What can be done about all these counterfeits?
It's sort of shocking Nintendo hasn't.
I'm very surprised.
Because a lot of those are first-party published games.
Yep.
N64 ones, Super Nintendo ones, a lot of like the Earthbound ones and things like that. Like, Nintendo could easily go, hey, eBay, you're going to put an end to this. We're going to sue the shit out of you for allowing this to go. Like, they could do that. And I don't know why. Maybe they don't think it's worth their time.
The only thing I can think of is it's just.
But if they go after ROM downloading, like, well, not offering the ROMs, if they go after that, why wouldn't they go after the actual pirated stuff like that where people are.
Sure.
I don't know. It's interesting. I'm not sure why. Next.
Hey guys, Ian from Rochester, New York.
Ian.
With the recent announcement of GoldenEye coming to Xbox with dual analog stick support, I'm wondering, what games would you like to see come back with modern controls?
What game would come out with modern controls?
That's interesting. The one that I think would be most fun for me to try, it already exists, Doom. Doom has had mods since Z-Doom, if maybe not earlier, that allowed for mouse
full
support.
Mouse.
Yeah.
Is there a mod that allows you to like look up even?
Yeah, full mouse support. Yeah, you can look up. It actually, like, if you play, and I always go to Z Doom, and everyone's like, Z Doom hasn't been used in ages. It's on this now. But it actually added full aiming too, where like if you know a guy was up here and you shot here.
Oh, it doesn't automatically.
It doesn't automatically.
It changes it from 2D to 3D.
It changes how the game acts to 3D.
Okay,
which is interesting.
Is that, and it's a mod you can just download?
It's a type of Doom, and you can load all sorts of WADs and stuff into it, I believe.
Wow, that'd be interesting.
It's been a while.
I'm
not sure if that's available on any of the console or official ports. If it's not, then I'd say that, because it's kind of fun to play. It does change the game. I mean, it does. Play styles and strategies in Doom, you know.
Oh, yeah. I remember the one part of which is it Doom 2 or Doom 1 where a guy would be shooting me. I couldn't see him because he was like up there. I was like, where the hell is he? You just hear him shooting me. I'm like, what the fuck? Because he can't look up. There's almost a charm in not being able to look up, though.
Yes. Yeah. So, I'd say that.
Remember, there wasn't a really 3D first-person shooter until Quake. It wasn't 3D. Either was Dark Forces. It was not 3D. That was off of like the Doom engine probably as well. Or I guess Wolfenstein engine.
Hi, this is Brett Douglas from Perth, Australia. I listen to you guys every week between the start of January to about mid-December. After that, I kind of just tune the fuck out. Sorry, guys. I enjoy the festive season too much. Drink too much alcohol, eat too much of the wrong food, go to too many parties, and then I start listening again about mid, late January. I just want to ask you a question. Do you feel you could do the same thing? You do the podcast religiously, and do you feel like you just want to take a break and enjoy your birthday or a festive period sometime? Thanks, guys.
We've taken off for Christmas before. We've taken off a week.
Not in a long, long time, although I believe we're doing that this year.
We're taking a week or two this year. I thought we did last year. We took a week. Because you've gone away one Christmas.
We might have done it last year because I was sick, but I don't think that was the intent. Okay. Because we've definitely recorded multiple.
I've done a best of one year, maybe a few years ago, I remember.
Yep.
We took a week off. Yeah, I think this year we're going to take a couple of weeks. Because it wasn't December. There's nothing happening before Christmas anyway. So it's like, what are we going to do? So we might take a couple of weeks there. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Patrick from Elgin, Illinois.
Hey, Pat.
I have a question for both of you. Have either of you ever watched the show Rescue 911, hosted by the great William Shatner? And Ian, did you know that they actually based a pinball machine off the show? Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
I might have played that and not realized it was based off of it.
Yes, I have definitely played it before. It's kind of a fun machine.
Just a rescue sort of theme?
Yeah. There's a helicopter that like picks up the ball and moves it, okay. If I recall correctly. It's, you know, I never really watched the show. No.
All I know is that it was memeable, I guess, even back like in the 90s, because I remember my cousin would tape it for all the funny reenactment moments that people...
Oh, sure. You know. I mean, that's what people watched Cops for, you know.
Reenactments and Cops?
Oh, I'm sorry. Just like, for the moments, the weird moments. Oh,
the weird shit. Yeah. Yes. But like the acting moments that are bad.
Gotcha.
Unsolved Mysteries didn't usually go that cheesy. They had some good acting in Unsolved Mysteries. They had some good acting here and there. Here and there.
I
mean,
I love Unsolved Mysteries. That's never in doubt, but I don't know if I would call the acting good.
It was above Rescue 911.
Okay. That's fair.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Domino calling from South Carolina. A lot of people love to talk about how franchises like F-Zero and Mother need a new entry. But what about those forgotten Nintendo IPs? So my question to you guys is, what Nintendo IPs that only got one entry would you like to see come back? Personally, I would love to see Uniracers or Mole Mania come back on the eShop as a small downloadable title. Thanks, guys, for the podcast.
Clue Land. I'd love to see a new Clue Land.
Does Nintendo own Uniracers?
I think they might. I think I've looked that up before.
Okay. I'll look that up.
I'll look it up. But yeah, Clue Land would be mine. I think it would be relatively easy to do a new one that would be fun. No, it was not. It's developed by DMA Design, but published by Nintendo.
Okay, so they may not own the rights to it anymore. Yeah. Gotcha. But it's listed as, Uniracers is listed as a single entry. Interesting. You said Clue Land?
Yeah.
In the same style or like a 3D thing?
Yeah, do the same style. Just, you know, more boards, more mazes, less memorization.
VR Clue Land? Swing around, get sick, and start throwing up in your VR. I mean, it's hard to do it for a single one. Obviously, me and John Cena, everyone wants F-Zero. I mean, that's ridiculous how there hasn't been another F-Zero. It's just ridiculous. You'll see another Star Fox eventually, whether the Wii U remake or a new one. You'll see it. It's big enough. It's hard to pick up one like the one-offs. It's just hard to think of one like what actually is going to be justifiable to me to redo. I think you should see another Wave Race eventually. That'd be nice. I love
there was technically two of those.
Oh no, I'm just saying in general. Like,
oh sure.
Like I said, I'm looking at the one-offs. Like, you know what, another Wild Gunman? Like what?
Right. A lot of the one-offs actually go back to like honestly like the 70s early NES era,
or they go back to the 70s on projection.
Sure.
Like Duck Hunt was a. You know, before it was a video game, it was, you know, shoot us fucking on a screen. How about another pro wrestling? another Nintendo wrestling game. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't... Well, yeah, I mean, it was Nintendo, but it was also, I believe that was largely developed by people who went on to form...
Human. It was. It wasn't developed by Nintendo. It was... there's one or two names. It was Try or some other name that was... who developed pro wrestling. The first Fire Pro game.
Hey, fellas. Steve on Long Island. You've both been tasked with coming up with a new civ and a new leader for the way down the line Civilization 7. Who you got?
Fresh leaders?
Yeah, like a new leader.
I don't know who. I haven't kept track of who was in the last one.
Yeah.
There's like 40 different leaders in the game, aren't there? There's like tons.
There are tons. I wish I could be better at this, but I am not. I have nothing to offer you.
I don't know. Say something and people get, oh, you're being political. God.
Hey, Ian. Your Holiness Pat Contry, the most Catholic man on YouTube.
Wait, where does that come from?
I don't know.
I haven't gone to church in God since high school was the last time I went every Sunday.
I just got another drug-related question this week. Have you guys had any bad trips or even good trips that have kind of fun stories around them or bad stories around them?
Good or bad stories?
I have been lucky enough to not ever have one bad trip, and I have tripped a lot. I lots of good stories, but I will just say that I posted this on Twitter yesterday. I think my all time favorite acid memory is fairly simple. My friend John and I and another couple of buddies drove his mom's blue minivan up to Allegheny State Park. Did acid, started in the afternoon, and at night we parked the van, and I was sitting on top of it while they were kind of like looking around and stuff and looking down the road, and the road was tree covered, and there was all of these fireflies out, just shitloads of lightning bugs, and flying around lazily in circles, and like looking down it was just this incredible tunnel of like neon light, because obviously you're tripping light trails, and it will stick out in my mind as maybe the most perfect moment. It was fantastic.
Oh, who doesn't love a lightning bug? That's one of the things I missed about living back in Jersey and back east, was the cute little lightning bugs.
Love them.
That the cats try to jump and swat, and you put them in your hand, you look at them,
and you let them go.
Let them go. And then they're dead in a week and a half because their lives are so short, but that's depressing. Okay, well, that's it for the CU podcast.
That's it.
Speaking of depressing, go vote. Make sure you vote today if you haven't mailed it in.
Yep,
you
have do today, it.
Or drop it off or go vote in person. But I dropped mine off. I left it for the mail carrier a few days ago. So I'm all good. You got to vote? You going to vote?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Get your sticker.
I'm going to go home. I'm going to finish work. And at 4, I'm going to go vote. And then tonight, I'm going to play pinball.
Yes, on 26 and 27 in California, please. I should be able to gamble much as I want, when I want, on my phone. Kids can't vote now. They can't vote.
They can't gamble now.
They can't walk into a casino without an ID.
Right.
So don't worry about them getting on a phone and get your parents' ID and their credit card.
Yeah.
I guess it's possible.
It is. But we're not introducing a new problem here.
Jesus Christ. Let me gamble online. Let me play poker and lose my money. All right. We'll see you later.
Bye.